Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. I'm not in our studio. In fact, I'm on the road, and I'll be on the road every day this week. But by telephone, hopefully you'll be able to hear the program. We have no guests today because I wanted to spend more time on a lot of different issues. We always begin with the latest on health and healing, such as poor sleep linked to toxic buildup of Alzheimer's protein and memory loss, and how research points to the healing benefits of turmeric, and get up and stand up for at least 2 hours daily during working hours. Also, a spoonful of cinnamon may keep the doctor away, and breastfeeding may lower the risk of leukemia in your child. Also, a more in-depth discussion today on chemotherapy. Another study shows that it, quote, just doesn't work with QOL during stage 4 cancer. Robert Harrington will discuss that. Additionally, on cancer, from The Guardian, cancer drugs rankings suggest many are of little benefit to patients. All right. Well, who do they benefit? How about the oncologist and the pharmaceutical company? Why doesn't something change then? Well, it can't because they have all the control over the system. Dealing with that, I'm going to talk about the placebo effect. It is real, according to the latest study. And this was done at the University of Colorado Boulder. So we'll show you about placebos. Also today, Finland is the poster child for why the euro does not work. We'll discuss that. Also, there's something happening in Europe that we're not focusing in the American media on, and that is there are people in Spain, a major movement, that want to nationalize the banks and throw off all anti-democratic straitjackets, meaning they want to get out of the eurozone, get back to their own currency, and reclaim their sovereignty. That's also happening now in Greece and in Italy. Also, who's the number one contributor to lobbyists out there when it comes to, well, redefining crime and prison sentencing? It's the private prison industry. And who are they raising money for? One person, Hillary Clinton. Why would that be? The Intercept. We explain it. Also, I want to give you my take on the emerging market currencies crashing around the world. You wouldn't know that by watching our media today, but indeed it is happening. Brazil is facing a perfect storm as the country slides deeper into recession. So the politics have gone off the tracks. So it'll crash around the world before it crashes here. In fact, if anything, there'll be this false sense of hope where everybody will be banning their currencies, including the yuan and the real, and the rupee to get into dollars. So, hey, when dollars are strong, gold and silver go down. Isn't that a good thing? They'll get into equities. Stock market will go up. That seems like a great thing. It isn't. It's a prescription for disaster. Also, big pharma's profiteers. You want us to pay what for those meds? Martha Rosenberg. And a new Alzheimer's treatment fully restores memory function. This will be interesting. Also today, time permitting, from Ralph Nader, sending citizen summons to members of Congress. Also, there was a raiding of a mosque the other day, over the weekend, by Israeli civilians. And they really tore to pieces. Well, Chris Hedges has a point of view on this and why he believes that there should be a movement for justice in Palestine. I'll share that with you because you're not going to hear about it anywhere else in the media. So as you see, we have a lot to discuss. Also today, if time permits, a 12-year-old child reveals one of the best-kept secrets in the world. And I'll tell you about what that secret is. Then Goodwill to Few Men, Goodwill Industries, I thought it was a nonprofit. I thought all the clothes I've given it and other things, nobody profits from that. Well, America's favorite Christian, Betty Bowers, has a different perspective. Also, the BBC News is talking about new identity chips. They're here. They're going into people. Wow. Let's begin. First up, we all need a good night's sleep. And if you don't get one, there's a lot can happen. You end up with fatigue. You end up with a lack of circulating melatonin. Your brain isn't protected. The rest of your body's not protected as well. Now, you cannot make up sleep. So if you miss one night and you sleep extra the next night, it doesn't count. It's one of the things that we have to remember about our body's biochemistry. It needs balance every day. Well, all of us have had times in our lives, either in college or traveling or going out and having, you know, socializing with friends or going to a party where we stay up later than normal. Well, you throw off your circadian rhythms. So here's what you're not aware of. This is from Berkeley neuroscientists. They connect a deficit of restorative slumber to an accumulation of beta amyloid. That's the plaque in people with Alzheimer's. This is from the University of California, Berkeley. Quote, sleep may be missing piece in the Alzheimer's disease puzzle. Scientists at the University of Berkeley have found compelling evidence that poor sleep, particularly a deficit of the deep restorative slumber needed to hit the save button on memories, is a channel through which the beta amyloid protein believed to trigger Alzheimer's disease attacks the brain's long-term memory. Quote, our findings reveal a new pathway through which Alzheimer's disease may cause memory decline later in life. And this was from the neuroscientist professor Matthew Walker, and it was published in the peer-reviewed journal Nature Neuroscience. Now, in lay language, in our brains, we have tiny little white streaks. Now, that could be beta amyloid deposits, and we know that that causes pathology leading to dementia, Alzheimer's, and Parkinson's. Now, it's a virulent form of dementia caused by the gradual death of brain cells that ends up as Alzheimer's. But before you get a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, you've probably gone through about 10 years of declining memory loss. I'm willing to predict, and I did 5 years ago, that I believe that Bill Clinton in the next 5 years will be diagnosed with full-blown Alzheimer's or dementia. Now, of course, that'll all be hidden from the public. They'll lie about it. Now, there is a way of preventing it and reversing it, but probably not on the schedule of the ultra-Orthodox doctors, that the top people in America who believe that they have the best medicine that money can buy. Well, that doesn't mean you have the best medicine. You just have the most expensive medicine, and frequently the worst. And interesting, just as an aside, for all the years I trained running every morning around either Central Park or the reservoir, and generally both, I would do a cool down 6 miles around the reservoir after running 12 miles around the park, I would pass almost on a daily basis Jacqueline Onassis. And there was I was publishing best-selling author Doubleday, where she was an editor, and there was a simple acknowledgement. But one day when I heard that she had cancer, I simply stopped for a moment, and I said, if you ever would like to know what some alternative board-certified oncologist could do other than your orthodox treatment, please let me know, and I'll be happy to put you in touch with him. She never went that route. There's just one example of a woman who was extraordinarily wealthy, had more than $100 million, when that today would be worth $1 billion. She had access to every medical treatment in the world, and she had a whole team of advisors, and yet they all were wrong, every one of them. And there's just something about this nature of hubris in our society that people who are consistently in power and consistently wrong are consistently in denial. Yesterday, I had the privilege of meeting and greeting and shaking hands with hundreds of people from the audience who live out on Long Island who came to the Huntington Arts Cinema for the screening of the new film. What a great group of people. All walks of life, all backgrounds, lots of young people. In fact, the owner of the theater came over to me and said, "Gary, we've never had, for a documentary, this amount of young people in there. Why?" And I said, "Well, why don't you go up and Google progressive ideas and articles, and you'll see who most people out there who are reading these and watching these and listening to these programs are young people. You know, this whole myth that all young people are detached from what's relevant in society today, simply, it's not true. There are millions of young people who are not only attached to social issues and relevant causes, but are actually leading them and doing important work." And so anyhow, it was just nice to hear all the different things people are doing and sharing. And one of the themes of my, I did a two-hour lecture after the film, but one of the themes of the lecture is, we only have one truth that we're allowed in our society, and that's official truth. Now, what defines official? Well, it has to be sanctioned. That means that there has to be some moniker of a federal agency, or some leading university, or a think tank, or a peer-reviewed journal, or a newspaper of record, or a major media. As long as you fall within those boundaries, you are considered acceptable. Now, you can be eccentric, you can be a little radical, but you're still in the circle. But the moment you challenge any sense of power, when you challenge the underlying foundations of the circle you're in, you're immediately threatened, warned, excluded, and then you are attacked. Look at Linus Pauling. It's just one example. The great cancer doctor, Andrew Ivey, who discovered that crebiocin actually does work when he tested it on first animals and then on humans, and he was excoriated. By the way, he was the most cited scientist in American history at that time. I think he had something like 2,400 articles. He was an MD, he was a PhD, and he was a jurist. Probably one of the most brilliant men ever to inhabit our planet. And yet, the moment he went, and he was also one of the directors up at the University of Illinois, but the moment he started looking at a non-toxic, natural approach to cancer, he was attacked from inside the cancer establishment, the official bearers of truth. A wackaloon named Fishbein at the AMA, you know, the guy that anyone who said there was anything good about anything natural, he would attack him. In any case, if you have truth and it's not in the New York Times, Judith Miller's truth was that there were weapons of mass destruction. So we go into Iraq knowing that the New York Times says it must be true, so it's true. No, the truth is that almost all relevant information today must come from outside of these mainstream sources, and anything that does come within mainstream must be scrutinized and challenged for its veracity. And so we should be very critical. So in any case, so for a long time, when you see people that are having these white flecks in their brain, that could also come from a mini stroke. Interesting when most mini-strokes occur. It occurs when a person's really rageful, angry, yelling, screaming, hysterical. Boom. They happen. Now, I happen to know that for a fact because a member of my family, my older brother, had multiple mini-strokes. And so he had to keep calm because when he didn't, there we go, those little mini-strokes. Now, the mini-strokes are not the major strokes. They're not the ones that, you know, it's out and over and you're paralyzed or dead. You start looking into some brains of people, you'll find all these little white specks all over the brain. And so keeping calm and keeping a diet and lifestyle that is healing and anti-inflammatory is how you keep your brain in good shape. But also now they're saying you better get a good night's sleep. So that's the takeaway message. Because excessive deposits of beta amyloid are key suspects in the pathology of Alzheimer's and dementia, but now the good news is that reverse poor sleeping habits and you can actually stop that pathology, and then you can rebuild. Also, a good point is that we have a simple herb, inexpensive, easy to get, that has thousands of studies that show it is a multi-healing nutrient. Now, this is from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and here's what it says, and this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Molecules. Quote, over the centuries, the root-like stem of the curcuma longa plant has been used to make yellow dyes and spike food with some tasty zing. But an ever-growing mountain of evidence shows that boldly colored turmeric with its earthy, bitter, gingery taste may offer a plethora of potential health benefits. Multiple studies, most originating in India, Europe, and Australia, show that turmeric, and especially its rich color constituent curcumin, can prevent and treat a wide spectrum of cancers, inflammatory conditions, autoimmune problems, neurological ailments, including Alzheimer's disease, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and diabetes neuropathy, among other metabolic diseases. And then it goes on to talk about the interest in it and how this new study shows it's so good. And he mentions one MD Anderson cancer study down in Houston and published in the Journal of Phytotherapy Research that found that it regulates inflammation that, quote, plays a major role in most chronic illnesses, including neurodegenerative, cardiovascular, pulmonary, metabolic, autoimmune, and neoplastic, that's cancer diseases. And another study at MD Anderson showed that curcumin, quote, has antioxidants, anti-inflammatory, antiviral, antibacterial, antifungal, and anti-cancer activity. Also bolstering its, quote, potential against various malignant diseases, diabetes, allergies, arthritis, Alzheimer's disease, and chronic illness. But I believe that people are not taking it at a high enough dosage. Most people, they're recommended 500 to 1,000 milligrams a day, and they generally don't exceed 2,000. But you have cancer, you have AIDS-defining illnesses, then you have to go at a higher dose under medical holistic supervision, and you can get some good results. Also, most people, when they sit for long periods of time at a desk, watching television. Don't. Get up and take a little walk. The British Medical Journal, quote, office workers should be on their feet for a minimum of 2 hours daily during work hours. This was published in the British Journal of Sports Medicine. This daily quota should eventually be bumped up to 4 hours a day, breaking up prolonged periods of sitting with the use of sit-stand desks, standing-based work, and regular walkabouts. And that's because it impacts your circulation, and that will help your brain, your extremities. It's really important that you give yourself a stand break each day. Also, a spoonful of cinnamon can keep the doctor away. This is from Touro College and University. It says, quote, a tablespoon of cinnamon can deactivate viruses before they infect humans, according to a new study on botanic extracts and their effect on pathogens. And this was done, and just cinnamon, and it had enormous benefit. So we knew that it helps control your blood sugar. So for diabetics, cinnamon is an absolute must. But now we're saying it does a lot more than that. So let's get cinnamon, put it into your shake. And they're even thinking that it impacts the dopamine levels in the brain, and that could help kids diagnosed with ADD and ADHD. And breastfeeding, according to the University of Haifa in Israel, lowers a childhood leukemia rate, and this is published in the Journal of American Medical Association Pediatrics. Now, we know that leukemia is the most common childhood cancer and accounts for about 30% of all childhood cancers. Still, most doctors are unaware of what causes it. Well, breast milk is meant to exclusively support all the nutritional needs of infants, and current recommendations include exclusively breastfeeding for the first 6 months of life. I say the first year and a half of life. But they found out that it made an enormous difference in lowering the risk of leukemia later in life. That's the latest on health and healing. Tomorrow I'm going to talk about the power to heal with coconuts and what's in the coconut and how the best way of getting it in to our system. But also I want to, before we take a break, I want to talk about the placebo. This is from Ben Spencer, the Daily Mail. Quote, the placebo effect is real. Even if you know the treatment you've been given has no medical value, researchers have concluded. Scientists found patients given a fake painkiller continued to feel benefits from it after they were told it was not genuine. But there was a catch. In order to feel these effects, the subjects had to be conditioned into thinking that the treatment was real and needed enough time for this belief to become ingrained. Those told it was fake after just one session did not continue to experience pain relief, the study found. And so now they finally acknowledge placebos work, and yet they say you have to believe in the treatment even if the treatment doesn't work. I remember having a conversation with Norman Cousins. There was a wonderful scientist. His name was Larry Leshan. He was a PhD clinical psychologist, but also he did the first studies that I'm aware of that were able to show that by just doing interviews with completely healthy women, he could very accurately predict which of those women were most likely to get breast cancer based upon their answers. And he was working at the Institute of Applied Biology at that time, as was I. And I said, what is the basis of this? And he said, well, he said, what you think, your body then believes, and it then responds to. So if you're not loved, then you believe at one level of your being, even subconsciously, you're not lovable. There's something wrong with you. In which case, then, you turn off the healing DNA and you turn on the diseasing DNA. Well, a lot of people couldn't accept that, but he wrote a book, and it was not that popular, but it turned out he was right, because Hans Selye, the father of all de-stress therapy, concluded that what he was saying was right, that what you believe, your body immediately turns into that. Now, think of all the drama queens. Think of all the people in our lives that, you know, they actually create drama through their actions, where the cause and effect can only create drama. And then they blame everyone, take no responsibility, but they emote. They're always emotional. What fools? Because anyone who creates drama, you're killing yourself. And yet they just can't bring themselves to understand the power of the mind. And then Dr. Kessler, who was, I believe, the chief psychiatrist of the city of New York, came with the Institute. We had a long conversation about some 500 patients that he had worked with doing almost the same identical work as Lawrence Leshan, though not communicating with Lawrence, and he came up with the same theory that you could take healthy people and based upon their psychological profile, how they felt, if they felt unloved, if they felt lonely, if they felt that they were not a part of a emotional family. In other words, if there was no one to care for them, love them unconditionally, they were likely to experience breast cancer and arthritis. So here we had three different people over a 40-year period talking about the power of the mind. And, of course, what they're talking about is what medicine today would say would be the nocebo and versus placebo. And then there have been multiple studies showing that when the doctor believed that they were giving a healing drug to people, that the people got better, and then it turned out that the study had tricked the doctors. It was a fake. Let me give you one good example of the power of the mind. One evening, a group of physicians, including probably 90% of all the holistic physicians in this tri-state area, came to a discussion that I was having and a study that I asked them to participate in for one evening at the Institute of Applied Biology, up on the third floor, which was my lab. And these, I will not mention their names because they're all household names within the health movement. Everyone would know who they are. And I said, okay, I just want, you're all using kinesiology in your practice. including my good friend, Marty Feldman. That was the basis of it. I said, now it may or may not work, but I want to see if it works or not. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to do a simple study. In these bags, we have things that promote health. Vitamin C, an apple, broccoli, and some walnuts, all organic. Now, theoretically, and based upon a hypothesis, these should make a person stronger. And then, in this bag, we have fluoride toothpaste, and we have another bag, we have white sugar. In another bag, we have three-day-old meat. And so when the people come in, you're all going to test them. And let's see, since they don't know what's in the bags, you do, let's see if they test strong or weak. Okay. By the way, the whole room was packed, these doctors. And sure enough, every one of the 10 people who came in were volunteers. On every one of the positive things, they tested strong. Every one of the negative toxic things, they tested weak. And that, you know, that was a simple, you know, study. And everybody felt good about it. We were about to go out to eat, and I said, but, oh, I want to show you something. And when I opened up the bags, I had switched everything, and all of the people got stronger on toxic things, and they got weaker on the good things. That's the power of the person who is giving the treatment, not just the person receiving it. And boy, that struck him. And we had a long conversation about this. And I said, so just remember this the next time you go to do any kinesiology on someone, how much of your emotional support is factoring in on the strength that you pull their fingers apart or push their arm down, because you're wanting something to work will definitely impact the outcome. In any case, it was never resolved. It was just left as an open question. But in science and in life, we have to leave some things open so we can get our own perspective on it. Now, why do I say all this? Because I believe that healing begins, real healing begins, when you engage fully the person who needs the healing experience. And I believe that until such time that that person liberates what is blocking them, whether it's insecurity or fear, uncertainty, if it's insecurity, then where does that insecurity emanate? It's not being loved or being rejected or not being wanted. We have to be able to at least have some understanding of the origins. Now, regressive hypnosis is one of the best methods of getting us back in time. So as we regress back through childhood, we start looking for the answers as a child would look at a coloring book. Oh, here are some good pictures on your 4 years old. Here are some pictures that are good and fun. Here's some that are sad and make you angry or fearful. Describe the pictures. And lo and behold, here's a 40-year-old adult under hypnosis describing something that happened back then. And then once you have opened that gateway and you see all these hundreds of millions of neuron expressions that this person's been holding, you can help clear that energy. You can change the outcome of the energy. And you can't do it through conscious conversation. There's just no way, because it's all on a subconscious level. And no matter how brilliant the psychotherapist or the therapist, unless you're Henry Grayson, then you can do some tapping therapy, but that's changing the nature of the energy. It's not through what a person's saying, it's what they're doing. He's mastered, the only one I know to master that energy where he's been able to help people. But otherwise, there are many ways using energy rebalancing that you can rebalance a person's energy, and therefore the energy that they're in the moment is conscious energy, and conscious energy is where you have to heal. You can't heal through subconscious energy. To the contrary, almost all subconscious energy causes disease. Now, I realize this may not make a lot of sense, but I will go into the greater depth on this and how can we get to being more conscious. For example, 95 to 97% of everything we think and do and say in a day is coming from our subconscious. Reactive, subconscious. Anger, fear, subconscious. reflective, introspective, conscious. Mindful, conscious. So we just have to be able to spend more time being conscious than unconscious. And even though we think we're always conscious, we're not. So real healing happens when you liberate the person from their limitations, from their past, so they can be mindful in the moment and all this healing comes out. So then when they say, oh, that was a placebo, no, it wasn't. It was the most powerful energy in a person's personal universe, the values and their beliefs coming from a spiritual center. Who was it? It was going back to Norman Cousins, because this is how he actually healed. You know, he healed through laughter and joy. Norman Cousins said the human body experiences a powerful gravitational pull in the direction of hope. This is why the patient's hopes are the physician's secret weapon. They're the hidden ingredient in any prescription. And he definitely believed that. Wasn't it Emily Dickinson who said, hope is a thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without words and never stops at all? Or it was George Herbert who said, hope is the poor man's bread. Because when you think about how people go through the healing process, or what we call healing process, more often than not, they go through the medicalization process. The more money you have, the more significant you are as a celebrity, then the more you're looked on as simply a defective organism that needs to be medically corrected through mechanistic means, the drug, the surgery, and they don't see you as a human being. Here's the irony. Those who cannot afford the best of medicine and have to rely upon other means have historically had to rely upon things including the power of faith, the power of liberating the inner healer, which shamans have done throughout time immemorial. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a brief break and come back, and then I'm going to share some additional insights. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. Nice to have you with us. Had a great group of people as a fundraiser for WBAI that we had dinner together. Great vegan meal. Walked clear down to Lincoln Plaza. Saw a wonderful movie. And I mean, for those of you who yearn for good quality, intelligently acted, directed movies, I would recommend this very highly. It's called Holmes, as in Sherlock Holmes. And it's the story of what he did in the last 35 years of his life when he retired after his last case to the English countryside. And now he's 92 years old at the end of his life and motivated by a young boy that is the son of his caretaker there. He's motivated to write and finish that last article, that book, before he dies. It's a wonderful film on every level. You know, we enjoyed that. It came outside, had a good conversation for an hour on the sidewalk, then walked back uptown, had a dessert, and spent about 6 hours together. Wonderful evening. I want to thank everyone. Everyone really participated. Everyone shared. And it raised money for our sister station. Now, this is from Ralph Nader. Quote, "It is time during this recess for we the people to shake up the Congress and shake up the politics around the land. With the long congressional recess in August through Labor Day approaching, we the people will have the opportunity to do more than complain about the Congress and individual senators and representatives. There are many issues affecting you and your communities that need to be addressed by members of Congress. Over the years, it has become increasingly difficult to reach the legislators in Washington, D.C., and when they return to their districts and state, they often only attend public events and ceremonies where they do little more than shake hands and smile. The diminishing number of in-person town meetings by members of Congress are often stacked and controlled. The locations, attendees, even sometimes pre-screened questions fail to provide citizens an opportunity to make their case to their legislators. Politicians crave predictability. They are control freaks. Shifting power from the few to the many prevents the gross distortions of our Constitution and laws, our public budgets, and our Commonwealth that currently favor the increasing corporate state. Over 535 senators and representatives need to be reminded that they were sent to Washington, D.C. by voters back home who entrusted them with the well-being of their communities and country. Many of these lawmakers then become indentured to corporate campaign cash that they must constantly beg for, often compromising with what is in the best interest of their constituents. For all this corporate campaign cash, these corporations want something in return: government contracts, giveaways, tax loopholes, weak corporate law enforcement, and other privileges and immunities, especially for giant multinational corporations that have tightened their grips on crony capitalism in Washington. So what happened to your votes and your trust in your elected representatives? They were nullified and replaced with ungrateful politicians who have forgotten that the authority lies with the people. It is time during this recess for we the people to shake up Congress and shake up the politics across the land. If anyone is skeptical of this possibility, they should recall August 2009 when the Tea Party noisily filled the seats of some town meetings called by senators and representatives in a Congress run by the Democrats. That is how the Tea Party movement came to public visibility with the daily help of Fox News. After that experience, many members of Congress were forced to reevaluate the power and influence of town meetings. My proposal of a citizen summons can begin the process of showing your elected legislators who is truly in charge, as befits the preamble to the Constitution, we the people. I'm including a draft of citizen summons to your senators and representatives. It covers the main derelictions of the Congress, under which you can add more examples of necessary reforms. Your task is to start collecting signatures of citizens, members of citizen groups, labor unions, and any other associations that want a more deliberative democracy. The ultimate objective is to reduce inequalities of power. Shifting power from the few to the many prevents the gross distortions of our Constitution and laws, our public budgets, and our Commonwealth that currently favor the ever-increasing corporate state." And then he goes on to show the summons, the citizen summons to members of Congress. I'll just read one paragraph here. It says, "Whereas the Congress has tolerated the expansion of an electoral process corrupted by money that nullifies our votes and commercializes both congressional elections and subsequent legislation, creating a Congress that is chronically for sale. Whereas the Congress has repeatedly supported or opposed legislation diverted the taxpayer dollars to favor the crassest of corporate interests to the serious detriment of the American people, their necessities and their public facilities, such as access to safer consumer products, health care, and other basic social safety services. It is opposed to raising the inflationary ravaged minimum wage and fair taxation, allowed endemic waste, fraud, and abuse of contractors by contractors, and authorized massive corporate welfare subsidies and giveaways. Whereas the Congress has narrowed or blocked access to justice by millions of Americans, leaving them unprotected and defenseless in many serious ways. And while giving business corporations preferential treatment and allowing them full access to influence the three branches of government. Whereas the Congress has imposed trade treaty deposition rules over our democratic institutions, the courts, legislators, and excessive use of our legislative departments and agencies subordinating our domestic branches of government's ability to preserve and enhance labor, consumer, and environmental standards to the domination of global commerce. Bottom line, and endorsed the usurpation of our judicial process by secret tribunals under the World Trade Organization and other similar invasions of U.S. sovereignty. Whereas the access to members of Congress has increased for corporate lobbyists and decreased for ordinary citizens. Therefore, the citizens of whatever state this is coming from hereby summons you to town meetings during the recess in August at a place of known public convenience to meet your constituents. And that's what he's saying. I think it's a great idea. Thank you, Ralph, for doing once again what was so common sense and obvious. Now, I believe that any reasonable person would assume that if you're getting a medical therapy that is dictated from the official sources, medical journals, medical schools, state medical boards, the American Medical Association, the federal government, the National Cancer Institute, and U.S., the National Institutes of Health, that it's been tested and proven safe and effective for each and every type of cancer it's given, you'd be wrong. None of that is true. In fact, the studies that have been done repeatedly show that chemotherapy in particular does not increase the quality of life or necessarily to any statistical difference the length of life. And sometimes it's just days that increases it, yet the costs are astronomical. This is from Robert Harrington from Nature Natural Society. Quote, a new study demonstrates those with terminal cancer do not necessarily benefit from chemotherapy. In fact, the results show just the opposite can occur. The closer the cancer patient is to death's door, the more likely that chemotherapy will accelerate the dying process as well as considerably affect their quality of life for worse. The better their quality of life, the more it will be eroded by the ravages of chemotherapy. The older the cancer patient, the more compromised the immune system, which then makes the individual more susceptible to all sorts of secondary infections and opportunistic pathogens. By administering chemotherapy to the elderly with terminal cancer, the body's natural defenses are simply overwhelmed. Oncologists have observed this phenomena for decades. Nonetheless, hospital cancer patients are routinely administered their chemotherapy regardless of these significant factors. Quote, results of this study suggest that chemotherapy use among patients with chemotherapy refraction metastatic cancer is questionable benefit to patients' quality of life in their final time. Not only did chemotherapy not benefit patients regardless of performance status, it appears most harmful to those patients with good performance status. Guidelines regarding chemotherapy use in patients with terminal cancer may need to be revised. End quote. You think? What it shows is there's just massive quackery, massive fraud, massive malfeasance, and malfeasance with premeditated and with forethought. The people in the cancer community have long known that chemotherapy actually is a carcinogen, speeds up the death of the patient after a rebound, and they do not have the evidence showing, but they have the profit. And so all those oncologists who were trained to supposedly win the war on cancer, friends, you have been doing it all wrong. And I think that you should take a different approach, but the approach I would suggest doesn't make you rich. Now, here's what The Guardian has to say. Separate article by Professor Richard Sullivan. Quote, many modern cancer drugs are of very little benefit to patients, according to a group of leading European experts. More and more medicines have been going on to the market with lower and lower levels of benefit. Among the drugs that do badly and a table published on Saturday revealing their efficacy for pancreatic cancer, which offers just 15 extra days of life. The experts are all members of the European Society for Medical Oncology. They presented their scoring system, which has nothing to do with cost, at a meeting in Chicago, the equivalent U.S. body, the American Society for Clinical Oncology. And the documents include scores for more than 70 cancer drugs and been published in the Annals of Oncology Journal. Professor Richard Sullivan, I believe he said, I think he is the man I interviewed for the Dr. Issel's story years ago, because the man I interviewed was a Professor Sullivan from King's College, and he supported Dr. Issels, and he excoriated those who were there to destroy Issels for a BBC special called Go Climb the Mountain. In any case, he says, quote, a group member, Dr. Sullivan, said they wanted pharmaceutical companies and those who fund drug discovery to focus on inventing meaningful drugs that help patients rather than just making profits. Quote, from Dr. Sullivan, over the past decade, more and more medicines have been going onto the market with lower and lower levels of benefit. So, by the way, the most profitable drugs out there are chemotherapy. You could now easily expect to spend $200,000 to $400,000 a year and die. You know, if there was 5,000 or 10,000 deaths of people using the orthodox approach, okay. But when there's 550,000 deaths, approaching 600,000 deaths per year, where people only used orthodox therapy, and they've done this for at least 40 years. So let's just be conservative. Let's give them the benefit of a doubt. Let's say that we use 400,000 as our post, times 40 years. That's 16 million people who died using their therapy alone. Wouldn't you assume that if 16 million people died, that's right up there with the genocide of the North American, South American native population by the conquistadors and those who invaded their native lands. One of the worst genocides in history. You're getting up there with serious numbers, and not a word, no irony, and refusing to have debates on this subject. What do you think? What are your views on this? I'm going to give you a number to call. Our engineer is going to send me that number, and I'm going to give it to you and for our talk back. And then while we're engaged in our talk back, I'm going to, which is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I can't play you all of this 12-year-old child exposing the immorality of the global banking system and why sound money is essential to freedom and stopping the spread of misery on this planet, but we'll give you a taste of it.
Have you ever wondered why Canada is in debt? Have you ever wondered why the government forces Canadians to pay so many taxes? Have you ever wondered why the bankers from the largest private banks are becoming wealthier and the rest of us are not? Have you ever wondered why the gross national debt is over $800 billion? Or why we are spending $160 million a day on the interest of the national debt? That's $60 billion a year. Have you ever wondered who receives the $60 billion? What I have discovered is the banks and the government have colluded to financially enslave the people of Canada. I will share with you three important points of reference, which will hopefully spark enough interest and concern for you to continue the research on your own and to engage your government to stop this criminal act against the people of Canada. First, we will briefly examine the Bank of Canada. Second, we will see how our banking system works today. And lastly, I will offer a viable solution that we can petition our government to implement. A very little known figure in Canadian history is J.O. Grattan McGeer. He was a lawyer, member of parliament, and mayor of Vancouver. His contribution to Canada is probably the greatest in our history. He championed the creation of the National Bank of Canada, whose sole purpose is to create and manage Canada's money. It was formed on July 3, 1934, and owned by all Canadians. Until the 1970s, because of the Bank of Canada, Canada's national debt was held at a constant, manageable level, until the government decided to implement what we now have as our modern-day banking system that is robbing the Canadian people. So how are they robbing us? Allow me to explain how our private banks and government work today. First, the Canadian government borrows money from the private banks. They then lend the debt-based money to Canada with compounded interest. The government then continues to increase taxation of Canadians year after year in order to pay back the interest on the exponentially growing national debt. What results is inflation, less real money for Canadians to spend into our economy, and the real money being used to pad the pockets of the banks. Also, the government gave the banks the ability to loan out money that doesn't exist in the form of loans. When a bank gives you a mortgage, which literally means a death pledge, or a loan, they don't actually give you money. They click a key on a computer and generate the fake money out of thin air. They don't actually have it in their bank vaults. Presently, the banks only have $4 billion on reserve, but they have loaned out over $1.5 trillion. To quote Graham Towers, each and every time a bank makes a loan, a new bank credit is created. New deposits, brand new money. Broadly speaking, all new money comes out of a bank in the form of loans. As loans are debt, then under the present system, all money is debt. What I find interesting is even Jesus in Matthew 21 drove out the money changers in the temple because they were manipulating the currency to steal money from the people. The private banks are just like the money changers in Matthew 21. They are defrauding and robbing the people of Canada, thus their freedom, and they need to be stopped.
You bet. Such a wise young man. Now, we're going to finish our program with quick calls from people in the audience. Please turn off your radio. Only be listening over the telephone, and we're going to rip right through these. Let's say hello to Eric from New Jersey. Hi, Eric. Your turn.
Hey, Gary. Thank you so much for everything you do. So I just wanted to bring this up. I don't know if you heard the story of I guess this is one of the more recent ones of, Casey, she was medically kidnapped. She was 17 years old. And she and her mother decided not to go with chemo when she was diagnosed. So they had 12 cops show up when her mother wasn't home. They kidnapped her, forced her down, strapped her down, and gave her chemotherapy for 6 months plus. And her mother had no, permission to come see her or do anything to fight the problem. This was in Connecticut. You heard of this?
Yes, I have, and it also happened in Oklahoma. It happens in Los Angeles. It happens every day in the United States, where the state believes that they have the right to come in if you don't vaccinate your child or you don't give your child chemotherapy, and they don't look at how many children die. In fact, go over to the second largest morgue in America, at Sloan Kettering, and go to their pediatric cancer ward, and then ask, what is the lifespan of the average kid here? They're rewarded for failing and allowing kids to die, actually contributing to it. But if a parent is conscious enough and educated enough to want to help their child, then that's considered a bad parent, and therefore the state comes in, steals your kid, kidnaps him, and prevents you from seeing them. Yes, this is an issue that must be made important. You are right on here, Eric. Thank you for calling in and bringing us that, again, that awareness to us. Bill from Brooklyn. Your turn, Bill.
Yes. Hey, Gary, how you doing?
Good.
Yes, good. Listen, I just wanted to say the whole war on cancer is a total fraud and a scam. It's really all about finances. About 10 years ago, my father was diagnosed with an inoperable stage 4 cancer. It happened to have been a squamous cell cancer. The chemotherapy, the guy that was going to administer, the oncologist that was going to administer the chemotherapy told us that this was the only chance for my father's success. you know, for my father to live with a very, very strong chemotherapy. Except the fact is that I did research and found, I researched the world medical literature and found nowhere in the literature supporting his point of view. And as a matter of fact, he had about a 2% chance of survival on this. I came up with my own plan, and 10 years later, my father's doing fine. The
good
chemotherapy would have killed him immediately. It was a squamous cell cancer, and you never give chemotherapy for this type of cancer. And
well, let them show you the studies in advance before they use the end of life of a person as a dumping ground for big pharma and the doctors and the hospitals. Thank you, Bill. Appreciate your call. Have a nice day, everyone. Look forward to seeing you back here tomorrow at the same time.